that effort that you put in right at the beginning of your career, when shit's hitting the fan and it's not going right and all these sort of things that happen in your career, and everyone has it. And the most successful people tend to deal with more problems than others. You learn from it and it gradually compounds over years. So it's the consistency that I remember. I remember telling myself as a kid, hey, keep going.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey everyone, it's Sam here. Today we're joined by Daniel Daggers, one of London's most influential luxury real estate agents and an innovator in the super prime property market. Daniel started his real estate journey at just 17, working his way up to become partner of the private office at Knight Frank, where he was involved in some of London's most prestigious property deals. And after 12 years at Knight Frank, Daniel took the bold step of launching his own brand, changing the game of how luxury properties are marketed in the digital age. He's now also a TV star with a series of Buying London on Netflix. So without further ado, let's welcome to the show, Daniel Daggers.
Wow, thank you for having me. Wonderful.
Amazing for you to be here. And of course, the other thing is I've got Steve Carroll here. This is part of our special series of like the ashes of real estate where Australia meets the UK. And I've got Steve here in case I say something like real estate broker or something like that. He's here with the right accent to translate.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if there's any football analogies, because I seem to remember you're a big Arsenal supporter. So if there's anything that Sam needs a little bit of help on, I can translate and use my UK heritage to proactive use, Sam.
Yeah, thank you. So first of all, Daniel, I just want to say congratulations on becoming a dad. Is that your biggest achievement of 2024?
No, I think that's my biggest achievement ever. Finding someone in the modern age that you want to spend the rest of your life with and then choose to have a child with, which is probably the biggest decision you'll ever make, is great. And it's funny because after I had the kid, I had loads of people reach out to me because I'm a bit of an old dad. I'm 44. And loads of people were like, oh, wow, this is amazing. You know, what's his name? All this sort of stuff. And they say, how do you feel? And I said, well, there's two emotions that I've got. The first emotion is I have an insane amount of protection, feeling that I need to protect my family, like raw primal protection. That was one feeling. And then the other feeling was an insane amount of passion for my kid to have pride in his father. And all my friends and clients and everybody just typed back saying, I don't think you lack on the passion front. So there were the two emotions and it's wonderful. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, amazing. Now, speaking of translation, for us Aussies who are used to sort of talking about Double Bay, which is where Gavin sells, and there's Kangaroo Point in Brisbane and Toorak in Melbourne. Tell us about some of the suburbs in London that you love working in and what makes them stand out.
Okay, so we call them golden postcodes. So if you've ever come to the UK, you have these three digits that are part of your zip code or postcode. I don't know what you call it in Australia. I have been to Sydney. And the golden postcode consisted of these neighborhoods. It was Mayfair, Belgravia, and Knightsbridge. Okay. But we've seen significant change where our clients and buyers are looking to acquire property. And that's partly due to the architecture of each neighborhood and the wants and desires for the new age buyer. And we spotted this, or I could be a bit selfish here. I spotted this about 8 years ago. And I called that certain neighborhoods are going to outperform others, which at the time got me into a little bit of hot water because everyone was saying, well, everyone just always wants to buy in Mayfair, Knightsbridge and Belgravia. And I said, well, I think that's going to change. I think you've got a more contemporary buyer in today's world. They want to live on less floors. They don't want to live on five or six floors necessarily. That you're going to see more transactions on wider homes and therefore the architecture is going to dictate where buyers want to go. So now people are in Holland Park and Notting Hill where massive premiums are being achieved. So you've got Holland Park, Notting Hill, Marylebone, which has just exploded in value, and then other neighborhoods that are very family orientated and have wide detached houses. And COVID sort of sped up this process of wanting your own little base ecosystem, not have to share any space. And you have wide homes with gardens and parking. So these are the neighbourhoods that are really performing. That's where we work generally.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. Now, let's rewind. Steve mentioned, I'm supposed to call it football. We call it soccer.
Yes, but Samantha, we invented it. Okay. All right. So it's football. Okay. It's something there. Carry on. Don't worry.
Right, yeah. So football, you initially, before real estate, dreamt of being a football player.
Yeah.
So what happened? And I think 17, that's really young.
I wasn't good enough.
Oh.
I just wasn't good enough.
Surely not.
We all want to dream. And sometimes when we're good at something, we really do sort of commit to it. But there has to be this, to get into something that's such a rarefied field, you have to be top, you know, 0.001%. And I knew deep down I wasn't that person. I wasn't good enough. So that didn't happen. And I fell into real estate, literally fell into it playing football. And I fell over, broke my collarbone and decided to say, hey, I'm going to quit my studies. I wasn't particularly a good student. I didn't go to university. And I just wanted to make money and get independent. That's really what I wanted. And put a subwoofer in the back of my Vauxhall Corsa. That's what I wanted at the time.
Maybe there is a bit of Aussie in you after all.
Yeah. What's a woofer?
Oh, well, yeah, like that's all I ever dreamt of when I was young too. So sort of, you know, like pounded the backseat of a car, but a subwoofer, that is. Anyway, 17, very young for real estate. And we're going to get onto some of the luxury stuff now. So you started at a small agency in London. And this is a question I often ask people that have been very successful in real estate. But do you remember your first listing?
My first listing? It's different in the UK because you have an agency system. So the business gives you property for you to sell. You don't go out on pitch. But I do remember the first time I went to value a property and get my first listing. And that was about 3 years into it. I was about 20. And I went to pitch on an apartment, which I valued at $249,500. And the reason why, and it was in Sutherland Avenue, and it was a top floor duplex apartment. And the reason why it was that value is that the stamp duty, the taxation changed. So if you were going to go above 250,000, the impact it had on the buyer was ginormous. And so often there was a cap at that value. And the couple that owned the apartment were charming and I got on really well with them. I remember having a slight panic attack being in my Vauxhall Corsa outside the house before I went into the pitch. I do remember that. And I came out and that was my first ever listing where I got mandated to sell the property. Yeah.
Amazing. And so what were some of your lessons from those early days selling those studios?
Just work rate and effort. I think that we can all upskill ourselves. But the one thing that, and I've spoken about this on social channels, that the people don't really champion is the level of consistency that's required when you first start to even today. Yeah, when I'm 27 years in, I would love us to champion consistency more. You see, in our careers, we all get a bit lucky every now and again, right? You'll work hard, but something may come across your desk and you can't rely on luck. So if you champion consistency, that effort that you put in right at the beginning of your career, when shit's hitting the fan and it's not going right and all these sort of things that happen in your career, and everyone has it. And the most successful people tend to deal with more problems than others. You learn from it and it gradually compounds over years. So it's the consistency that I remember. I remember telling myself as a kid, hey, keep going. Now, I think it's more difficult today for people because at the time when I was a kid, I knew nothing about nothing. Literally, I came from local authority housing. I knew nothing about Rolexes, chauffeurs, private jets, glam, cars, girls. Like I knew only that was in our world when we were a bit younger, you only knew like a little bit that was around you. So I didn't have any FOMO. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges for people in the industry. And so it kept me on the straight and narrow.
Daniel, can I just ask a question about that? Because after we met, and it was such a great 40 minutes, a number of friends of mine said, well, what did you and Daniel talk about? And I remember you saying to me, you grew up in a gritty part of London. You weren't born into money. And I know what, I worked in the East End at a rag factory, actually, which is another story, another time. But so I know what it, I can picture in my mind where you came from. That consistency, is that one of the qualities and the learnings that you took from that early years living that you now still stick to selling real estate?
Yeah. I mean, the level of consistency, I speak to the guys in our business and it's the most consistent people that are the most successful. Look, when you come from a very humble background, and I had a great upbringing, like don't get me wrong, my parents were loving and caring and whenever I wanted their attention, I got it immediately, which is the thing that is probably the biggest chip on my shoulder right now in my life, is that I want people's attention when I want it. But the thing about growing up in a really humble household and background is that you don't have this perceived image of yourself. You only know what you know. And you know that you have to work hard to achieve. And so I had a very selfless attitude when I was a kid, where I was like, I don't know anything and I can't deliver anything to the party. There was very little arrogance because I didn't know as much as my competitors. So the only true benefit that I could deliver to people is the fact that I was going to save them time, buy them a coffee and make them have a good time coming to look at properties. That was the only thing that I could deliver. And then obviously after years, you get experience, you know the neighborhood much better than everyone else. You can roll off deals that you've done, and then you have value and compounding value in your skill set, your strategy, your execution, your language, everything improves. But at the beginning, it was just basic consistency.
Fantastic.
Interesting. So let's talk about Knight Frank, because I imagine that must have been interesting years that you were there. I mean, 2014 was one of their best years. First of all, you worked your way up from associate to the position of partner of the private office, which I think is, I mean, you only get that title in accounting firms in Australia, private office. So tell me about working your way up from the ground up to obviously the highest position there.
Okay. Traditionalists, people like us, we understand titles, and titles carry value to us. They don't really carry much value in today's world, I don't believe. I think there's different ways of really leveraging value. Look, I came into KF at an interesting time where I saw our world change. I saw how brand and offices and expansion really impacted markets. And so I wanted to go to a place where I was going to put myself in a place where I was going to be more successful or have a better chance to be successful. And so I made that decision. I went into a business that had probably at the time 150 negotiators across London. And when I left, there was probably something like several thousand, yeah, or a couple of thousand. Now, all those people are employed, no one's self-employed. And so that becomes a really big business, a lot of responsibility. And I climbed the ladder for 6 months. I joined in 2007, November 2007, just before the financial crisis. And I didn't do a deal for 6 months. And bear in mind, I was used to doing deals, probably having 12 live deals going all the time. I didn't do a deal for 6 months. I learned how to speak to wealthier people because it's a different language you use, different attitude. And I had to learn new neighborhoods. But then after 6 months, people underestimated me, which was fabulous, best place in the world to be. And I excelled and I was there for 12 years and I was the highest fee earner globally in that business. And I was referring, I mean, to give you some numbers, because you got all professionals here, I was doing about £250 million worth of transactions a year. I don't know what that is in Aussie dollars. And I was referring about £750 to £1 billion worth of real estate across our platforms of business at the time to other people in the business in different sectors. And that's not big developments, that's small independent homes where people would ask my opinion on value and strategy. It was great. I learned so much. I learned so much about professionalism. I learned so much about different cultures. I was able to meet so many different people that my human intelligence was able to grow and flourish. The thing about being in a business like that in London is that you deal with lots of different cultures, lots of different age groups, lots of different kinds of people. And so your human intelligence just grows exponentially. So you know how to deal with certain segments of markets in different ways and how they negotiate and perception and how they may perceive you and stuff like that. It was fascinating. I also had the US ambassador role, which meant that I was traveling to the US back and forth. And I came to Sydney to speak at an event, which was about 7 years ago. And I loved it because I always wanted to push boundaries. I always wanted to see what else I was capable of. And I was always uncomfortable.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was. It was fabulous, really, for me. Still have a lot of love for that business.
Yeah, I picture that sort of environment, particularly in that time, as being super competitive with the best of the best. Like Knight Frank, to me, is sort of the top gun of real. Like I've interviewed agents before from Knight Frank, wow, Australia. Some of the properties, you know, Barangaroo, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Also, I think I read somewhere in the UK, Knight Frank, during the time that you were there, sold Winston Churchill's house and a massive power station and all of that sort of thing. Is there anything that sort of sticks out as memorable amongst those millions and billions of dollars that you had a hand in doing deals with?
Look, it's not really the transaction that gets me going. okay? It's really the nuts and bolts and the strategy around how you achieve levels of success in a consistent way. Because I have been involved with multiple deals over £100 million or $100 million in different parts of the world, at KF, but probably more where I am now in our own business, partly because of inflation and you've got more homes over £100 million. Look, you had a time where you had a lot of the best-in-class people working at big businesses. And so you wanted to be around those people and you wanted an element of competition, but businesses don't often want too much competition because too much competition kills culture and so does politics. And so you want to have elements of competition, but you don't want to have too much. And that's a very difficult balance to achieve. In fact, there is no balance in trying to find balance. I don't believe in that as someone who wants to win consistently. So that was really tricky, being around a lot of very intelligent people or perceived intelligence. And the way I look at it is that our business is a bit of a game. Our life is a bit of a game. And I just want to learn from everybody that I ever meet so that I can play the game better. And that was when you're put in a space with a lot of very good people, you can learn far faster.
Just on that, Daniel, do you have a coach?
No, I don't have a coach. I've thought about it, but the more and more time I spend building the business, the more and more time I think that I may need somebody who's a coach that is not related to selling real estate.
Right.
Because I don't know how the guys that are going to listen to this on the pod feel, but our roles are changing, okay? We're no longer just people who meet people, go out and do viewings or showings, and then sell real estate. We produce content, we network. The way I look at things is that we're all a business. So I'm Daniel Daggers Limited. I am Chief Marketing Officer, Chief Financial Officer, and CEO of my own business. I need to learn how to do other things very well for me to stay relevant in the future and be successful in the future. So I can always learn and I learn from people around me all the time. But I think part of the coaching part may be more related to media and content and sort of structural dynamics for businesses and stuff like that, as opposed to agency. But in agency, I act as a coach for the 39 other people in my business and more and growing, you know?
So let's talk about DDRE, which is your own brand and the brand that's obviously featured on Buying London. Mm-hmm. And I did sit and watch several episodes of that with my mouth open like this. I mean, you know, like the properties that, you know, are on that show are just absolutely phenomenal.
Well, you got a £500 million property on that show.
It's absolutely unthinkable. I look at that and I picture sort of Downton Abbey or, you know, King Charles or whatever. But on the subject of creating DDRE, what has been biggest challenge, well, both sides of things, what's been the biggest challenge, but what's also been the biggest reward of running your own brand?
Everything's been an insane challenge, okay? I've never built a business before, and I am a people pleaser. So I want to find every reason possible to do right by other people. When you're building a business, you can't necessarily do that because you need to create a fair environment for people to succeed. And that's been tricky. We also built it during COVID. So crazy things have been difficult building this business. The amount of difficult things to achieve, just minor things like setting up a bank account took us 3 months in London. It was just crazy. Because we've done a lot of very difficult things. It's not easy to do a Netflix show and do the first ever big show in the UK when it comes to real estate because it's such a slow moving market. We're producing content when other people thought producing content was crazy. We're building personal brands where other people thought it was crazy. In a very traditional market, we are seen as a black sheep and someone that's very different, group of people that are very different. Now, my attitude was, I want to be different. I don't want to be the same as everybody else. I don't want to achieve the same results as everybody else. I want to achieve my results. I think I'm capable of doing incredible things. I think the people around me are incredible and they can do incredible things. And so if we want to do special things, we have to do things that other people haven't done before. So every day is difficult because we're going into the abyss. Right? We've built a lot of technology. We've probably got the biggest asset bank of content in the UK now of luxury homes. All these things are really difficult, but unbelievably rewarding because we've changed our industry here in the UK. It's a big statement, but it's true. And we have relationships with agents all over the world. We've got clients that live in Sydney that want to sell their $45 million home in Sydney, and they're reaching out to us to say, hey, can you help us? Everything's a challenge. I've never done that before, but it's super exciting.
Speaking of that, I was going to ask you about Advisor AI.
Yeah.
So what was the idea and the thinking behind that?
Let me give you a little bit of a story about how, and this would be really useful for everybody here, how I became very influential. And I'll give you a data point because I think it's better. In my previous business in 1 year, I sold 80% of the 20 plus million pound homes in London in that whole business. Okay. Now, the way I did that was that I empathized with the fact that I don't know everybody. And when all these real estate agents run around the world going, we can sell everything and we have the best market share. The truth is that you don't have 99.9% of the market. Nobody does. And therefore, whilst I'm representing the client, part of my job is to work collaboratively with the other people who have networks to introduce buyers. So what I did on my travels is I met all the top agents around the world and I built great relationships with them and people on the ground in London. And I used people as a network and people use me as part of their network to win business. And my belief is that we've gone from 6 degrees of separation to 3. I suspect if we all looked on Facebook, we'd probably know one person who knows us all, okay? Because that's the world that we live in. So we need to utilize that consideration that we are all much closer to one another. And if I can get a piece of information to the person in between me and that buyer, because it's gone from 6 degrees of separation to 3, I'm going to find that buyer faster. So ADVSR does that, okay? It's essentially an influencer platform for real estate professionals around the world to collaborate. And the beauty of it is that any real estate broker agent around the world can go onto that platform and now give global distribution to their client, but not have to go and work in a big business and give 80% of their P&L away, right? They can just sign up for a minor cost and be part of a network of 26,000 people. And that is really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are there any qualifications or barriers to entry to be part of that 26,000 community, or can anybody in Australia be part of it, Daniel?
Anybody in Australia can be part of it, but it's like anything, it's a tool that you can use, but you have to go and build relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't just plug in and get access to everybody and everyone wants to work with you. You actually have to go and follow people on social media, send them a DM, collaborate with them, create that relationship and something that I call trust equity with people. Build trust equity with people. And once you've built the trust equity, they'll want to collaborate further with you. You can build a bigger business. So you might be Sally from Sally Associates in Double Bay. And they might say, Sally, I'm not going to give you the business because this other firm has got global, have got global mandate, or they've got multiple offices around the world. I know that doesn't work. Okay. Most people know that doesn't work. But if Sally can say yes, but I'm going to refer this property, right, to an advisor and an ambassador of mine called Daniel Daggers in London and this person abroad and so on and so on. Now, all of a sudden, Sally doesn't have to give her value away. She can stay in her small business because that's what she loves and that's why people love her. But she can utilize a big group of people around the world and that gives her power and influence.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say that's very smart for Sally anyway, because being able to sort of say, well, you know, like I've got a relationship with Daniel Daggers, or I've got a relationship with Gavin Rubenstein, or I've got a relationship with Ryan Serhan.
Super valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were just having a little while ago about, is it the personal brand or is it the company brand that is more important these days?
If I was working at KF and I gave you the answer, you might say, I'm going to say that. But in light of us spending millions of pounds and huge amount of time on building a brand in the UK called DDRE Global, okay? I'm hoping that my answer is going to reflect positively on the people, knowing that I'm being absolutely authentic and honest. Personal brand is the most important thing that anyone could ever wish to achieve in building, okay? The corporate brand doesn't really mean much to the eventual customer, okay? In a practical way, because it's the individual that delivers the service. It's the individual that can utilize tools to deliver a greater service. Now, it's the business's role to support the personal brands, yeah, not the other way around. The reason for that is that individuals can now market themselves. They are chief marketing officer. They can get your property to hundreds of thousands of people, and no business that I'm aware of can email a property to 100,000 people. So it is the individual that carries the influence now, and the individual has to find the business that enables them to be more successful. It's like what I said earlier, when I left my small firm to go to KF, I just want to go to a place where I can be more successful. We all want to be more successful. I only want to be around people that want to be more successful. But the success comes in building your own brand and building your own business.
That is so fantastically articulated. And I know that you've got a huge following on social media. Daniel, I was reading your LinkedIn profile last night in preparation for this podcast. You've got close to 50,000 connections on LinkedIn alone. Mm-hmm. We're not even touching Instagram and Facebook and those other platforms, but you obviously put a lot of energy and effort into building your brand through social platforms. And we still have agents in Australia who question whether or not it's worth it.
Okay, let me put it into perspective. We have built the fourth most influential real estate business in the UK, okay, at marketing and selling homes over £5 million with the oldest and biggest incumbents that you could ever be up against. We did that in 4 years, 4.5 years before Netflix, and we didn't spend any money on paid media or offices, zero. All our investment went into social media channels. All our investment went into me at speaking events, me doing podcasts, other people doing podcasts, and influencing and speaking to people, communicating with people globally all the time, every single day. You see, and the way we have to look at it as real estate agents is the following, okay? And it's a very simple analogy. The best real estate agents in certain neighborhoods are the ones that walk down the street, and it could be Sally or Peter, okay? They're going to walk down the high street and everyone's going to know who they are, okay? Everyone's going to know who they are. Oh, that's what's his name because he does all the big deals here and he's a great guy and I really like him. His kids go to local school, whatever it may be, and they know a lot about that person and their friends know a lot about that people, and that person is the person in the know, okay? I want to live on the high street, but I also want to live on the digital high street because there are more people walking up and down that digital high street than there are that physical high street. And anyone who's not capturing the attention on the digital high street is losing it to me or their competitor. And when they lose that person to their competitor, do you know what happens? Their profit and loss has a big impact. Their business doesn't produce as much profits because they're going to have to give me a portion of their fee. And then they're going to lose stuff like market share, which I don't care about. Okay? I think market share is a fantasy number and it doesn't work in favor of the client. So if you're not producing any content, you're going to be in trouble in 5 years' time because no one's going to know who you are. And then there's going to be a young man or a young woman. There's going to be Ahmed or Jessica. They're going to be producing content around Turak and they're going to meet your customer before you are. And then they're going to impact your income. And then you'll realize that actually that was a mistake and I should have invested more time in communicating to my potential client base and people who can introduce me. And it's that simple.
So this seems like a good time to sort of segue into a content creation superpower, which is AI or generative AI that's been part of the real estate conversation now for at least 2 years. How do you see AI impacting the real estate industry?
It's going to impact every industry. But I don't think it's going to impact people the way they think it's going to impact people. People are concerned that there's going to be a robot walking down the street with a set of keys doing viewings and carrying a baby as the woman who's just given the baby and is looking at the properties first. I remember those days when I would go out and the lady would turn up with a baby. I would say, do you want me to hold the kiddie? But the robot's not going to do that. AI is not going to do that. AI is going to do the following thing, okay? Most people that I know want to do business with the best person they can do business with. If you want to cut your hair, unless you've got a relationship with someone for 20 years or whatever it is, you want a hairdresser who knows what they're doing and they're really good at what they do. It's the same thing with real estate agents. People want to deal with the best people that they possibly can. The thing is that AI is going to enable Daniel Daggers to do 300% more work. And if Daniel Daggers can do 300% more work, I'm taking that business from other people. So it's not that a robot's going to do it or AI is going to do it. It's just going to utilize the individual that you want to do business with so they become more efficient and better at what they do. And that's a bit scary for people because if you don't have a digital presence and you're building your brand, then people can't fall in love with you. Like really genuinely, people can't care about you, not creating any trust equity. Oh, I love her because she wears really colorful outfits or she's got a podcast and I love her podcast and that's why I want to do business with her. You'll lose all that opportunity and people go straight to the best person in the industry and they'll say, please, can you help us? Like Daniel, hey, can you help us sell our £5 million property? I don't deal with £5 million properties, but I will have the time and I'll be able to utilize tools and my AI to enable me to do that. And that's just going to come from another real estate agent's book because they'll be able to get me. And that's what AI is going to do.
Yeah, interesting.
Fabulous.
Oh, sorry.
No. I'm just enjoying the conversation and enjoying
the... By the way, we're building this. We are at the forefront of this. The most difficult thing about AI is that it decentralizes things, right? So I believe that the Aussie market is a brokerage. Essentially, it's a brokerage model. Okay, anyone who runs the estate agency model is going to be severely impacted by AI because it cannot be utilized. It's first-party assistance. It's going to help the individual more than it will help a company in the service sector.
Yeah, I see it as a bit like, or Rocky. You could be Rocky, like somebody with a bit of grit who knows a bit about AI, going up against Apollo Creed, who's had all the best education, who's
correct.
Just the best tools, who's got, you know...
It democratizes everything.
The best shorts, and then all of a sudden Rocky is either level or above because they're using AI well.
Yeah. Samantha, look at it this way, ready? Every business is an information sharing business, okay? Previously, the best people would be able to hold the information really close to themselves and then utilize it in compounding value and succeed. Most of that information is going to be publicly available. And if that information is publicly available, the value of the information doesn't disappear. It goes somewhere else. And it goes to the people that can deliver the information further and faster and more efficiently than anyone else. That's it, right? So if I can get a message that another agent can get to their database of 100 people, 2,000 people, they can do it once. If I can get that message to 150,000, 200,000, 30,000, 10,000 people every single day, I'm going to win. Because the first person that gets the lead will be able to utilize the tools and the freedom of the information and get that property in front of the right buyer very, very quickly. And what that does is it levels the playing field, absolutely levels the playing field. And it means that Peter, who's been a real estate broker for 6 months, but has a big digital footprint, is going to outmaneuver the person who's been doing this for 50 years because he can get the information to people that the other person for 50 years can't. That's it. So everything that we're doing, we're building around the art of communication. It's the most valuable thing.
Daniel, question for you. There's been a lot happening in the UK or in Europe. You've obviously changed your government very recently.
Yeah.
We had Brexit 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, we all experienced COVID, but COVID was pretty rampant in the UK. You've got a war just across, you know, literally 4 or 5 hours away over in Russia, Ukraine. Do these events impact your business or do you just encourage yourself and your team to control the controllables and just move forward? What's your sort of take on that?
All the stuff that goes on in the world can't impact the fact that I have to wake up and pay the bills. I still have to do that. What am I going to do? Sit on the sun deck? Mind you, it's only 7 degrees here right now. I'm definitely going to sit on the sun deck. This geopolitical game, right? What happens is now we're finding out that when there's a problem somewhere else in the world, it impacts everyone else. Okay. So when we've seen uprising in Turkey and uprising in the Middle East with the Arab Spring, it impacted property values in London because people see London real estate is a great store of value. Okay. So when shit hits the fan around the world, people buy real estate in London. Okay. Now, you're probably going to see that because of where you're located with geopolitics and potential wars and everyone sort of brushing shoulders with sharp elbows and trying to figure out who's the most powerful dominant force in the world. What's happening is that Australia will be seen by certain people in your region in Southeast Asia and Australasia. They're going to see Australia as a safe place to put money. So you're going to see lots of overseas investment. But in our world, when we see hypermobile individuals and wars taking place and all this irrational things that are happening like COVID, which is a black swan event, what it does is it just pushes human capital around the world. And every country in every capital city, in every city, in fact, is at war with one another to entice talent to its country, right? Talent to its neighborhood. So it's more enticing now because of social media. People are looking at Dubai and going, I would love to live there. And the governments are saying, hey, we're only going to ask you to pay 9% tax now on your earnings. And by the way, did you know that it's sunny here all year round? And there's beach and you can drink alcohol here. And actually, we've got casinos coming. And this is the greatest place for you to start your startup. Okay. They're looking to entice people to come in. Okay. I knew that was going to happen. I bought $150 million worth of real estate for clients there that's probably now worth $300 million. Okay. This is just a big game. And the more you choose to understand it, the more you can anticipate where markets are going to go. And my view now is that London looks relatively cheap against other global cities. Okay, London looks really cheap. If you're looking to buy in Dubai now, best in class asset, it's about £3,000 a foot, or I don't know what the conversion rate Aussie dollars, but US dollars, it's about three. Okay, fine. So let's just stick with the pound. Yeah, it's about £3,000, £3,500 a foot to buy best in class there. Oh, I can buy an apartment in Mayfair at £2,500 a foot. London's starting to look really reasonable. It's also starting to look like, whilst it's like a slow moving animal, right? This sort of stumbles every now and again. Yeah, we need to sort of liven it up a little bit. It's still seen as a very safe place to house value for you. Excuse the pun. And these are things that when you're speaking to ultra high net worths from private offices or family offices, these are the things that they're thinking about, right? They'll have £100 million that they're looking to invest. And they'll go, what does our risk appetite look like? Well, we want to put 10% into high risky assets, 20% into relatively risky assets, and the rest of it we want to have as a store of value. So people are going to look at loads of markets that way. I'm not going to go on to the next subject that we could get onto, which is fractionalization of ownership and what that looks like and social media and all that sort of stuff.
I just noticed the clock.
Yeah, you've probably got to get going to, you've probably got deals to do and things like that. But
I've got a finance meeting.
One more question. For someone who looks like they've done a fair bit of it, even now becoming a dad, what is next for Daniel Daggers?
No, I want to change the world. I just have this burning desire. Look, one thing that I want to leave on is you don't know what your future is going to look like, but I can tell you that it can be amazing if you really believe in yourself. If you put yourself in the right place and you really believe yourself, you recognize your downfalls and what you're not good at, but you're happy to just go 100% into what you are good at. I just think that there is so much opportunity in the world. And so I feel that we've already changed an industry. I think we can do it again. Our business is full of people who want to be at the sharp edge of change. And I'm very excited to hopefully lead that change.
Yeah, fantastic. Sam, I know you've got a closing question. Can I just throw one in for you?
Yep. All right.
So we all know as Brits, Chris Rea's Driving Home for Christmas is an absolute classic. For a man of international travel as you are, where's home at Christmas?
Home is wherever my missus and my kid is. So we'll be going to Dubai over Christmas and New Year because you've got friends there and we're craving the sun, guys. We're craving the sun.
I actually thought you were about to ask him whether it was like Wham or Mariah Carey.
Yeah. It's all of them.
No. Okay. That's me. That was me.
Anyway, look, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate you coming along and sharing some of your wisdom and some of your experience and everything like that. We know you're a really busy guy. From our family to yours, I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We hope we get to see you again. If there's one thing that you'd like to leave everyone with, what would it be?
Speak kindly to yourself. Think great things of yourself. Have a positive mental attitude. Don't let people say it's your ego. Yeah? Positive thinking allows you to win.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Daniel Daggers, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.